I'll begin with a small correction. I don't think I could be considered a Talmid of because of the greatness of Rav Shapira. We learn from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Mem Vav Amud Bet 46b, going on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph 47a, that where the Gemara debates whether Hesped, a eulogy, is Ikar de Shichbe or Ikar de Chaye. Meaning, are we coming to honor the dead person himself by describing his personality, by bringing out to the open many of his deeds that may not have known of before? Or is it for the honor of the living, meaning his family, his students, people around him, to honor them for having such a special relative who had just passed away? The Gemara goes on and on to discuss this question and finalizes that Hesped is Yikara de Shichve. Meaning the main essence, the main importance of eulogizing is in the honor of the dead person, to bring out to the open who he really was, disregarding any living person at the moment. Therefore, La Halacha, we find two main nafkaminot for this question, and that is, on one hand, if the dead person himself had pronounced before dying that he rather no one eulogize him after death, we must accept his wish, because it's only in his honor. And since he doesn't feel like he wants to be eulogized by anyone, then we must accept it. And on the other hand, if he did not pronounce such a request before dying, but his offsprings, his children, for some reason or other decide not to eulogize and not to maybe pay even for someone to describe their lost one, then Beit Din can force them to pay someone for eulogizing, because it's not in their hands to be mochel, to cancel this obligation of eulogizing, because it's for the sake of the dead. If so, this becomes even more difficult for me to be standing here, because I would say it's even less than a situation where you ask a dwarf or a midget to describe the looks and the features and the physical being of a giant. He can't do that. If the most he could do is describe up to the ankle of the giant, or maximum up to his knee, but not much more than that. He's just not that height. So with regards to Rav Shapira, one of the Gedolei Ador of this generation, which we'll be describing in somewhat of as much as we can reach out to describe his personality, but him being such a tremendous giant and owning the name Avraham directs us straight to a pasuk in Yehoshua, the book of Yehoshua, where the pasuk there says, Ha'adam ha'gadol ba'anakim. And Chazal say that this pasuk comes to describe Avraham Avinu, the greatest of giants. So we could use that term with regards to our generation, that Rav Avraham Shapira actually can be described with regards to the yachas to everyone else in this generation as Ha'adam Gadol Ba'anakim, and therefore I don't feel at all in the position to be able to describe by being way down below his great deeds and great personality. But even so, since it's an obligation, as we just learned a minute ago, to eulogize Ikar de Shichve, we must do that. We can't cancel this obligation. And Chazal go on and say that whoever is lazy about eulogizing a Talmid Chacham that has passed away, terrible things happen to him. So we must fulfill this obligation up to the extent we're able to. So to begin with, I think the best definition for describing Rav Shapira is just a walking Torah, a living Torah. That was his personality. That's it. Just walking Torah. There's a story I've heard from my own grandfather, should long live, who was one of the closest Talmidim to Rav Soloveitchik, and he was once present when this following story happened. Soloveitchik was walking into a wedding hall, about to walk into a wedding with another rabbi friend of his. And at the entrance, they were fighting it out who should walk in first. Obviously, the other rabbi wished that Soloveitchik should walk in first, being much greater than he was. So Soloveitchik commented, "You should be walking in first because you're holding on to a Gemara. So the Kedusha of the Gemara should be first, so please walk in first." So the other rabbi answered, "I'm holding on to a written Gemara, but you are a walking Torah, walking Shas. So you go first." And that's how he won the battle. Soloveitchik walked in first. So I would say the same idea could describe Rabbi Avraham Shapira. And taking into account this coming up week's Parsha, Parsha's Chayesar, the very beginning of the Parsha, where it says, "Vayavo Avraham lispod lesara velivkota." This is the first time in Torah that the word hesped, lispod, is mentioned. So actually very appropriate to what we're doing now. And there also Avram was involved, although he was the one eulogizing, and here we're eulogizing over Avram, Avraham Shapira. But still we have somewhat of a connection. And over there in that pasuk, it continues on, it says, velivkota, and to cry over her, to weep over Sarah. Now, if you look in the Chumash carefully, you find that the letter kaf in the word velivkota is a small letter. And that's how tradition is. That's how it should be written in Torah, in the actual scroll, that's how it's written. Why is it that that letter kaf is small, actually, in the word velivkota? Didn't Avraham Avinu, wasn't he extremely sorry, wasn't he extremely sad about the death of his beloved wife? Did he only cry a little bit? Why should the kaf be little? So a possible answer could be that actually when a great person passes away, then there is a slight reason that maybe some of the sorrow isn't there like it is for normal people. And why is that? Chazal tell us, tzadikim bemotam kruim chayim. A tzaddik that passes away, even after his death, he's considered alive. We find that also specifically by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu lo met. Yaakov Avinu never died. Spiritually speaking, he never died. And the same goes for David HaMelech. We always sing the song of David Melech Israel Chai V'Kayam. He's living and existing till today. So we find that tzaddikim never die. What is the reason for this? The reason is because their teachings to us, their attribute, their great educational messages that they've spread out to the world before death continue on till this very day, and therefore they actually spiritually never really die. We're always thinking of them and learning from their ways. So this could, and therefore maybe this could explain the small letter kaf, meaning that Avraham Avinu on one hand was terribly sad and disturbed by the death of Sarah, but after all he knew that her teachings and her later on descendants and offspring and all of Am Yisrael will still benefit from her personality for generations and generations to come. So therefore it wasn't a complete loss of her personality because much of it still remains till today. A short story that I've heard at Yeshivat Merkez Harav, where I was studying for several years and still study there every single morning before I come to teach you at Yeshiva every day. The story goes, with regards to tzaddikim bemotam nikraim chayim, the story goes that an elderly man was on the line when the telephone rang at the yeshiva's office on the very morning of the funeral of Rav Shapira. And what was his question? His question was, what time would the funeral begin? So the secretary told him at 10:30. It was at 10:30 on a Friday, the second day of Sukkot, after he passed away on the first day of Sukkot. And that's when the funeral was supposed to begin. So he thanked her and closed the telephone. 2 days later, he calls back, the same individual, calls back the office of the yeshiva and describes to the secretary an unbelievable thing. He tells her that he was the one that he called 2 days ago, the day of the funeral, And he's an elderly person at the age of 76, 9, I don't remember exact age, living in Ramleh, approximately around Lod, around Ben Gurion Airport, and which makes it a hassle for him to come all the way to Jerusalem, to Yerushalayim, where the funeral was supposed to take place, especially since it's Sukkot and Friday, right before Shabbos, and he's elderly. And another tremendous addition to that is that he has knee trouble. His knee hurts him. It's difficult for him to walk. And he knew part of the funeral is to walk to the grave, but he assumed that he walked just a little bit, 4 amos of the Livui, and then hop on a bus and you go all the way to the funeral itself. Much to his dismay, he decides to come to the funeral. Comes at 10:30. Hears all the eulogies there, and then the funeral begins by walking all the way from Yeshivat Merkaz Arab, which is in the very entrance to Jerusalem, all the way to Har HaZeisim. I don't know how many of you have attended the actual funeral, but it was a really long walk under the heat of the sun, quite difficult for youngsters as well. But this man decided that he's going to walk the whole way through with his hurting knee and with all the other difficulties he had. He decided to walk. He went all the way to Har HaZeisim by foot. And he tells the secretary, you won't believe it. Since I finished that walk and they buried Rav Shapira, the great tzaddik, my knee no longer hurts me. That's what happened. True story. So here we see how tzaddikim motam nikraim chayim. Even after the death of Rav Shapira, miracles occur by being close to him. Now, what is included when I say that he was a living Torah, a walking Torah? What is included? What can be included in that with regards to Rav Shapira? So the first idea I would like to take up on is the idea of Amal HaTorah and Amal HaTfilah. As a youngster, he was involved fully and completely and strenuously only in Torah, learning days and nights, constantly, without stopping, at Yeshivat Hebron, back in those days of Geula. One of the stories they say was that in those days, two of the greatest minds in the Jewish world, Rav Yisr Zalman Meltzer, who wrote the famous commentary on Rambam called Evan HaEzer, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who later on became the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, wrote a series of books by the name of Har Tzvi. They both would ask Reb Avrom, that's the nickname all of his students used to call him, Reb Avrom. So Reb Avrom was the one that they decided on asking him to give him to go over their works, even though they were much, much older than he was, and the Gdolei Ador of that generation, and he was a youngster at Hebron. There he was the one chosen to go over their works and comment on anything he felt was incorrect. So we see his greatness from the very beginning. And a story that was told by his own son, Rabbi Yaakov Shapira, who now became the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Arav, following his father, the story he had told at the funeral was that it was not at all uncommon that his father would ask himself or other sons of the family several mornings a month that they should say Birkas HaTorah, having him in mind. Now, when does that happen to a person? When can a person not say Birkas HaTorah in the morning? If he stayed up the entire night. And that happened to him constantly, again and again. So that's where he got in much of his learning. Another example of his Amal HaTorah would be that I myself would see this. Almost every Shabbos he used to get an Aliyah. The Torah was a Kohen. Except for the time when he had to actually bless the bracha, Brikas HaTorah, for the Aliyah and listen in to the laning, every other moment his lips are moving. If it was at the time of the Mishaberach, of the Gabbai, for himself or for the community or for all of Am Yisrael, his lips are moving constantly. And if it was Ben Gavra LeGavra, waiting for the next person to appear to bless the Torah, his lips are always constantly moving, most probably rehearsing by heart a lot of his learning and Gemaras that he had known by heart. Same goes for Simchas Torah. You would see him sitting in his normal place after he had held the Torah for a while, sat down in his place, and his lips mumbling all the time, constantly. Nothing in front of him, just by heart. Saying, going over Torah, 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 except for the moments where I myself or other fathers of young of small children would come over to him to ask him to bless our child in Simchas Torah, our son, and then he would stop for a moment, bless Birkas HaKohanim, like he was used to, with a great smile, and then go on with his mumbling. Another fabulous story that was told by his son, again, Rabbi Yaakov, was that towards the end of his life, in his beginning of his 90s, he passed away at the age of 96, so at the beginning of the 90s, he had complained to Rabbi Yaakov, to his son, that he wasn't seeing well. So Rabbi Yaakov said, okay, I'll take you to the eye doctor. So they both went together to the doctor, and he examined and tested his eyes, and after a few examinations, he told the doctor, a non-religious one, told Rabbi Shapira, your eyesight is perfect for your age, over 90, nothing wrong. So he says, what are you complaining about? What's wrong? So Rabbi Avraham Shapira answered him, I'm sorry, but I can't see Rabbeinu Hananu. Now that means on the sides of the Gemara, you know, we have very small letterings of commentaries on the very side, edges of the Gemara. After the Rashi and Tosfos, we have even small letters of the Rabbeinu Hananu in certain Gemaras. So I can't see Rabbeinu Hananu. So the doctor turned to Rabbi Yaakov, the son, and asked him, who is this Hananu that he can't see? Who is this Hananu? You know what Rabbeinu Hananu means. But actually this means that up to the very end of his life, he was still learning Rabbeinu Hananu, which is something remarkable, because that is, although it's a Goyen, and his words should be studied and learned as much as possible, but still, at such an age, to be involved in such deep learning is tremendous. And by the tefillah, Amal HaTefillah, we could describe, first of all, his own private tefillah of Shmoneh Esrei that was quite long. Again, for his age, all the way to the end of his life, his Shmoneh Esrei was a long one. And even though the yeshiva was built of youngsters, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olders, still his tefillah was longer many times than most of the fellows, and most probably with full concentration. And then the most remarkable point is by Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur till, let's say, 5 years before he passed away, he was still the chazan, the shatz of Mosaf of Yom Kippur and Ne'ilah. Very long davening, especially at the Yeshiva Merkaz Harav. We used to go on, and him standing there with great, loud tefillah for everyone to be able to hear very strongly, and full of might, full of Yiret Shemayim that you felt in his words, and same goes for Ne'ilah. Only later on, towards the very, very end of his life, he decided to give up Musaf, and he remained only with Ne'ilah till maybe the last year, where even that he wasn't able to do. But otherwise, he's very much into prayer, and let me just tell you a short Dvar Torah that he had said the last time that he was able to speak before the Tkiyot of Rosh Hashanah, which was Tafshin Samech Zay, meaning a year ago. And that is, when he asked, how come we lay in the Haftarah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the Haftarah is about Chana, praying for having her own child of her own, and receiving and being blessed by Hashem to receive a child, which was later on Shmuel, the Navi, the prophet Shmuel. He asked, how come this is what we lay in on Rosh Hashanah? The obvious answer, which everyone knows, is that this happened on Rosh Hashanah. The actual acceptance of her tefillah and her becoming pregnant was on Rosh Hashanah. Three were nifkad on Rosh Hashanah, and she was one of them. But Rav Shapira came up with an unbelievable answer. He says that we find in the Medrash that when Elkanah, her husband, told her, why are you so sorry? Why are you so disturbed? Anochi, alo anochi tov lach me'asara banim. I am here for you, and I'm better and more sufficient for you than ten sons, ten children. So what's so bad? What's so difficult for you? Now, obviously, this is a very difficult sentence and statement to say to someone to a woman who can't carry children. But Chazal explained that actually Elkanah had received prophecy. This was nevuah. It wasn't only a psychological attempt to soothe her. This is an actual nevuah that she would never have children. And therefore, he was telling her, "Alo anochi tov lacham, you're left with me, and that's it. Nothing else to do about it." And yet, Chana goes on and prays for having a child. After she had realized that it's a nevuah that she would never have a child, she goes on and prays. Meaning that Chana felt that nothing can overcome and nothing can be stronger than tefillah. Tefillah can change everything, even prophecy. Especially if it's prophecy for the bad, and we know that Hashem changes for the better if we're worthy of it. So this is why we lay in Tefillah's Chana and the Haftarah of Chana on Rosh Hashanah to prove that our tefillahs can be accepted in every situation, the most miserable, and even in the one that was predicted by prophecy that should remain that way, still can be changed by tefillah. Okay, the next topic that we could describe about Rav Shapira was the Oz HaTorah, his might and the strength he had through the Torah he learned. We know that Chazal explained the pasuk Hashem Oz Le'amo Yiten. Hashem Yidorech Atamo V'Shalom Ein Oz El HaTorah. The strength we have, the might, is all, the fearfulness is all from Torah that we learn. And in Rav Shapira, we felt his strength in Torah was so powerful, so strong, that he wasn't afraid of anything. His psak halacha was clear and cut. Lo tagul yipnei ish. Wasn't afraid of people around him, of those who are usually more appreciated above him, and of his circles and so on, and not afraid of anyone who's from the outer circles, from those, from maybe politicians and those who control the country. Yet he wasn't afraid of them at all. Especially this has to do with his love to Eretz Israel, to this country. And we remember very well, very distinctly, 2 and somewhat years ago, when all that was going on with Gush Katif, and the expulsion from Gush Katif, and the destruction of Gush Katif, where Rav Shapira came out strong and sound, more so than any other posek and rabbi in all of Israel, that one must not take part in all the doings of the destruction of Gush Katif, even if he's a soldier, he shouldn't be part of it. And no matter what happens to him, if he's taken to jail or anything else, it's against Torah, he can't be part of it. Other rabbis, even if they were of the same type of hashkafa, still they made all kinds of pilpulim and discussions and doubts and so on and so forth, to make to all kinds of excuses as to how come this is different. This maybe you are allowed to take part and being in the first circle or the outer circles of the soldiers and so on and so forth. For him, it was clear cut. Nothing. You're not allowed to be part of it at all. And even though he was again by the government and other such people, he is very much. It was people were very, very angry at him, and even almost was charged for causing rebellious opinions in the country. Still, he did not care less, and he knew if this is what Torah wants of us, then this is what we do. And there's even a case where he came into the yeshiva, into America's Arab. I wasn't present at the time, but I heard from others that he came in with a letter of one of the other rabbis of the religious Zionist circles, who had wrote up an idea that since this may break up the army completely, shatter it to pieces, because some soldiers will accept, some won't, so maybe it's better to take part, and so on and so forth. He came into the yeshiva with that article and tore it right in front of the eyes of the entire yeshiva. Said, this isn't Torah. Right in front of everyone. Which leaves a last longing impression as to his might, as to his strength of his thoughts, having no doubt. And the actual last signature he had ever signed in his entire life, meaning the time when he had entered for the last time to the hospital, the last signature, I have a copy if anyone would like to see later on, when you see his hand already shaking, his last signature was to do with Eretz Israel. But again, we should never this should never be at all exercised or done by any of of the Jewish leaders of any times, that all of Eretz Israel must be in our hands, and we should fight for it and never give up any parts of the land. Okay, now, the next point is Zrizus HaTorah, the quickness he had in him with regards and through the idea of being all involved and all part of learning of Torah. And this is correct in his speech, in his thought, and in his actual walking, physical being. He was very quick in everything. So first of all, this has to do with him being a Kohen. As I'll tell us, Kohanim Zrizimim. So this is true for him. But even more so, the idea behind this is that anything spiritual causes quickness. There's no time factor for anything spiritual. We learn this from the Lechem HaPanim. That Lechem HaPanim was hot the moment it was taken out in Beis HaMikdash from the oven. It was hot and it remained the same heat. It remained hot all through the week, even though it wasn't on top of a platter or anything. It was outside on the table, Shulchan HaPanim, in the Beis HaMikdash, and it remained the same heat all the way through the week till it was changed with new bread. So the idea is that in the spiritual entity, time isn't a factor. So therefore we have this idea of quickness, of hastening our pace with regards to anything spiritual, when we're connected spiritually to anything. This also connects to the famous story in the Gemara of Shabbos Lamed Gimel, where Rabbi Shir Bar Yochai had exited for the second time from the cave, and there he sees Hahu Saba, an old man, running towards Shul right before Shabbos begins. He's running to Shul and with two hadassim in both of his hands, holding on to the branches of an hadass on both hands, and running to Shul. So over there, and that's what caused Rashbi to calm down and to absorb the world as something worthwhile living in. So Rav Kook over there in his commentary called Einaya on the Gemara of Shabbos Lamed Gimel explains very, very, very terrifically this idea that Ahu Saba, this old man, was connected, well connected to Torah, to spirituality. That's why he was able to run to Shul, even though he was getting old. He was able to run because in spirituality there's no dying down, there's no process of losing strength, losing power. You're always with it, you're always quick. And that's actually what happened, what was with Reb Avraham. Myself being a Levi, I used to go wash his hands before Duchenim, before Nisias Kapayim. He would never walk to the sink. He was always quick running steps towards the sink. If it was in the morning, to reach Shul, so it wasn't because he was coming late. It was just because that's his fashion. His fashion was to always walk quickly, and his steps were small and quick, and also running from his house all the way to the yeshiva and all the way to his place up in front, and laying the tefillin quickly. Everything was in a quick fashion. His speech was quick, and so on. Now, with regards to Chochmat HaTorah, meaning having wisdom, even if it's not directly connected to Torah, he had just general wisdom in him that was unbelievable. And this he can prove from a few stories. One of them was that being a dayan, he was also a dayan, a judge in a Jewish religious court here in Israel. He was a dayan Beit Din Gadol. Later on, he also became the chief rabbi of Israel. So in that position, he automatically become the head of the supreme religious court of Israel, Beit Din Gadol. So, being so, one of the cases was when a woman appeared in front of the Beit Din, when he wasn't part of, wasn't one of the judges in that case, and she comes into Beit Din in front of her husband. And here in Israel, the courts, religious courts, mainly take care of divorce, unfortunately. That's their main job. So she was in the process of getting divorced. And since her husband was giving her all kinds of difficulties of giving her the get, then she came into the Beit Din in front of the husband and proclaimed, my husband had divorced me, Gerashtani. Or pointing to him directly and saying, you have divorced me. Now, according to Halacha, Chazaka ein isha mizah paneha bifnei ba'ala. A woman doesn't dare say anything, doesn't dare lie in front of her husband. At least it was that way in the days of Chazal. Not sure if this Chazaka is still relevant in our days, but hopefully for most people it still is. But the idea is that a woman would not dare lie in front of her husband. And if she proclaims in front of him, "You have divorced me," then she is ne'emenet. That is the halacha. We have to believe. So the dayanim on the spot were astonished. What do we do now? If she had proclaimed that, so she's actually, we have to accept. She's ne'emenet. She's reliable. And then they are a divorced couple. Even if she can't prove where the get is or anything else. So now the husband has nothing to do. He's out of it. He's out of the picture. They're divorced. So what do they do now? And they had a feeling that she was lying. So they called over Avram Shapira. He's a smart guy. He can help us out. They call him over. And he hears about the problem, about what happened. He goes and walks over to the woman. And he asks her as follows. He says, "You must probably remember when you first got married to your husband, under the chuppah, you circled around him 7 times. Is that correct?" She says, "Yes." So he asked her, "Then how many times did you circle around him when you got the divorce, when you got the get?" So outrightly, she right away said, "3 times. So Rabbi Shapir said, "You're lying. There's no such minhag. For 7 times around for the chuppah, there is such a minhag, but there's no minhag to circle around the husband while giving the get. So you're lying." And that is the way he got it out of her, that she never was divorced actually to him, and that the dayanim did not have to accept, even though usually, normally, halacha accepts this type of proclamation. The second idea I would bring up for his just general intelligence is the way he would issue Ipsak Halacha. Many times, poskim go through all the different sources of every question and delve deeply into the Rishonim and Achronim and Shas and poskim before them and so on and so forth and reach their conclusion. By him, this was surely done by every single question, every aspect of Halacha and every aspect of Torah. But yet his wisdom was above all of this. And for example, a very, very common sentence of his was to use a rule mentioned in Rishonim many times in Shas, "Shelo lotzi laz al Rishonim," meaning even if you reach a conclusion that halacha should be in a certain way, if it's different than what used to be, the way that poskim and people were accustomed to from generations before, then you don't issue a new psak halacha different than what used to be, than what was common generations before. Lo lo tzilaz arishonim. Don't embarrass those generations from before. They had a reason, even if you don't know exactly what it was, they had a reason to behave that way, and we don't change very easily the ways. One of the examples for this that I recall is his psak halacha with regards to the woman covering her hair immediately after the chuppah. Many poskim can't find a reason how come this should not be done. For a woman that is already married after kiddushin and chuppah, she's considered married already, why should she not have to cover her hair immediately after the chuppah? That same evening, before the dancing begins, before the feast, before the seudah, right after cheder yichud. So some poskim actually point out this should be done. And slowly, in our generation, slowly but surely, the youngsters are doing this. And their wives are covering their hair at the wedding, at the night of the wedding. But Rav Shapira's attitude was different. He said, even if we can't find an exact explanation or one that is based on halacha or on poskim of previous generations, still, since we hadn't seen this done ever, generations ago, then we should not change. Are we better? Do we consider ourselves holier and more righteous than the generations before us? They were greater than us. And if their wives didn't do this, then we shouldn't do it either. Lo tzilaz arishonim. A similar idea is also with regards to the chumrot that go around in this modern world of Torah. That many times, being more stringent considers a person more righteous. Takes upon himself another chumrah. They've already opened up a chumrah of the month club. Every month you have to find a new chumrah to be part of this club and be considered something worthwhile. But in the eyes of Ram Shapira, this was all wrong. He used to call this atzbanut ilchatit. Nerves. When someone's nervous about the halacha, that's how he's supposed to practice Torah mitzvahs. Be more calm about things. Accept things as they are. Not go on and try to find every difficulty in life and say, oh, this makes me more of a yiras shamayim because I practice mitzvahs in a more difficult fashion, more difficult way, a more stringent way that really has no clear basis to, and it is only there in order to include all the opinions of everyone. That's now how you issue psak halacha. Psak halacha should go by the majority or by the mechaber or the ramah or Ashkenazim, Sephardim, and the Mishnah Berurah and the Yakut Yosef, those who are considered the top of the line poskim, and all the rest you don't have to regard. Otherwise, you become nervous about your practice of Torah. In this point, there's a famous story also having to do with this about the difference between the Natziv said this, the difference between himself, the Natziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was living a little before the Holocaust, the difference between himself and Reb Chaim Ibrisk. He used to say the difference was that he himself, the Natziv, would enjoy fulfillment of Torah of mitzvos because of the fashion, the calm fashion he used to practice the mitzvos. Whereas by Reb Chaim, he's taken into consideration every single opinion possible, and then while eating of the matzah on Leila Seder, it would be for him so such a nervous issue that did he eat the matzah, the full kezayit that he should according to all the opinions, and was it quick enough, and he has to do it again because he wasn't sure, and so on and so forth. So that was the type of enjoyment that Reb Chaim had, but the Natziv himself felt that his enjoyment was more of a calm way of practicing mitzvos, the one that is obviously according to Torah, but doesn't necessarily have to include every single opinion in all the exact seconds of everything. And the final point would be, if you have time to pass around these sheets, would be, I would think the concluding point is probably the essence of Rav Shapira, which includes all that we've said till now and brings it to its final result. And that is Simchas HaTorah. So first of all, Rav Avraham himself had a sense of humor, even though it sounds to us like he was all into Torah and nothing else interested him, and all serious and always learning, nothing else in the world, but it's not true. He had a sense of humor. An example to this could be when I myself approached him once, a few years ago, to ask him about one of the most common questions that come up in this generation with regards to let's say male-female connections, and that is when a woman extends her hand to you as and hello, are you allowed to grab it and give her and give it back? So again, in the post-Kim there are many opinions. Most of them are stringent about this, that you are not allowed to. And the approach of Shapira was very interesting. He first of all told me that surely you should try to sneak away in some fashion that which obviously should not hurt her feelings, and he gave me all kinds of examples to do so, but I tried to press more and ask, what happens if you're in the middle of the process, she's already extended her hand, and you have nothing, no way to sneak away. What do you do then? So he first broke up with a smile and said, I was then at the time still single, and I was clean shaven, so he said, well, very simple, grow a beard. And that the idea was that if you grow a beard, then most women, at least here in Israel, acknowledge the fact that person with a beard doesn't want his hand shaken by a woman. So first grow a beard, and then this won't happen to you in the first place. So that was his idea of humor. And then another sort of funny answer he had for someone. When a person approached him with regards to the bracha of a gomel, when you're in a dangerous situation and you were saved from it, you have to say berkas gomel in front of 10 people in shul. So Rav Shapiro was asked by a person who said that he was actually almost involved in a car accident. It almost happened, but at the last moment he was able to move away and nothing ever happened. Does he then have to say a gomel or not, just from being saved from the nearing situation of danger? So Rav Rom, in his humorous way, said, you know, I'm almost in danger every single day. When my wife takes my pants to the washing machine, she almost takes my leg together with it. So the idea was, almost isn't considered actual danger. Okay, so that's the actual Psak Halacha also, in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Tzatzal. He also felt the same way, that being almost in danger does not require the bracha. Not supposed to the bracha of Birkas Hagomel. The famous case of Rav Shlomo Zalman, where he gave this Psak Halacha, was unfortunately in a stabbing event when an Arab came to a bus stop right by, if any of you are familiar with, right by the central post office of Jerusalem. There's a very big bus stop over there, center of town by Rehov Shalom Tzion, I believe. And he started stabbing people with a knife. So those who were stabbed actually, and yet were able to recover and to be saved and later on live, must say a gomel. But those that were standing at that same bus stop, he didn't have a chance to approach them as well and stab them also, they should not be saying gomel, because they were just almost in a dangerous situation, but not actually in one. Okay, in any case, that's regarding his humor. But the final point, having to do with this Egle Tali you just have in front of you now, is just by looking at the person. You look at Rav Avraham Shapira, the face I still recall, obviously, in my mind, is of such a man that is always happy. You see this inner happiness. You see this content feeling. You see his face glowing. Not even talking about a smile, which was always there, but his eyes. The eyes are considered the mirror of the soul. His eyes were full of true happiness in them. They're always dancing. You saw his eyes, always happy, in a very happy sense. And the idea is that a person who has delved into Torah, immersed into the waters of wisdom, as Rambam says at the end of Sefer HaTahara, Taval b'me'adat, you immerse yourself in the waters of wisdom of Torah, then you have a real sense of a content feeling in you, and a spiritual closeness to Hashem that creates true happiness in you. You don't have to look for anything else. He didn't seek anything materialistical in this world. He lived in a very simple apartment, in an apartment building, first floor walk up without an elevator, right across of the yeshiva. Nothing to do with anything physical or materialistical. His whole life was connected to spirituality, and that's what created simcha in him. The ma'o panim. You saw his face glowing, his face enlightened always. And that is what you reach when you behave the way he did. And that is our last request of Hashem in the Shmoneh Esrei. Even though this is part of the three last brachos are considered Birkos Hodah, versus the other 13 of the middle ones, which are considered the ones that we ask for things, the Bakasha. But even in the Hodah, we actually ask for things. And that is in the last bracha of Sim Shalom, the very last request from Hashem is, Baruchenu Avinu Kulanu Ke'echad Be'or Panecha. We should be blessed all together with the enlightenment of your face, of Hashem, which is actually being so well connected to Hashem, spiritually, with all our might, with all our personality, which enables us to receive the Or Panim of Hashem Himself in us. And that is what glows outwardly towards the people around us. So this was what Rav Shapiro actually was. And the very last point is from the Egle Tal. The Egle Tal, famous Hagdama, was the Sochet Sheva Rebbe. He also wrote a shut, a correspondent called Avnei Nezer, and his son was the famous Shemi Shmuel, who wrote the commentary on Midrashim of Torah. So in his Hakdama to the book Eglei Tal, which is a book discussing very deeply the insights and the halachos of Shabbos, all through the 39 halachos of Shabbos, in his introduction, he points out, I'll just read a few lines from the last paragraph you have in front of you, where he says, "Umidei dabri zachor ezkor, as I speak, I remember, ma sheshamati k'tzad b'nei adam to'in miderech hasechel b'inan limud torteinu hakdashah," which I have heard from many people who are mistaken with regards to the learning of Torah. Ve'amru, what do those people say? Ki alomed u'mechadesh chidushim v'sameach u'mitaneg b'limudo ein ze limud Torah k'kach nishma. Person who learns Torah and has all kinds of his own chidushim, his own new insights of Torah and explanations in Torah, and is happy and has content feeling and has appreciation of what he had taught, then it's not real limud Torah lishma. One should learn Torah lishma, meaning in a serious fashion without any happiness, because then already he wants for his own benefit, as if then he's learning for his own benefit to feel good, and that's not completely lishma. Kmo im haya lomed b'shitut shein lo me'alimud shum ta'anug v'rak l'shem mitzvah. It should be, these people said, that it should be that you learn Torah with no delightful feeling at all. Just learn for the sake of the mitzvah. Almost be disturbed by Torah, but make sure to learn Torah because it's a mitzvah. That was their way of thinking. Let's skip a line and a half, and then he says, "Uvemed ze ta'ut mefusam." This is a famous mistake, or a great mistake, says the Eglei Tal of the Sochet Shavar Rebbe. The Adraba, on contrary, the main attribute of Torah is to learn Torah with full happiness, with great pleasure, and that you extract fun, great feelings while you learn. That really means if you appreciate Torah properly, and you enjoy learning Torah, then the Torah gets absorbed in you more and more. And you become part of Torah, and Torah becomes part of you. Otherwise, if you're sad, and if you're too serious, and don't feel anything towards Torah, for Torah, then you're not really absorbing the Torah. This is how he becomes glued to Torah. Okay? And let's skip another few words. If one says that by feeling happy while learning Torah, this is considered lo lishma, because it's for your own benefit, and it's not for the benefit of Hashem, not for the benefit of the mitzvah, הרי שמחה זו עוד מגרע כוח המצווה ומכה הורה. ואיך ידל מזה יצר הטוב? He brought beforehand from the Zohar that the opposite is true. That while learning Torah b'simcha, that's when the Yetzer HaTov grows, becomes more powerful than the Yetzer Hara. When you're able to exert simcha from learning of Torah. So how could this happen if this is only considered shelo lishma? If this is secondary to the best way of learning Torah, which is without happiness. So it says this is obviously wrong. He says, I admit that if a person is learning Torah only for the intellectual pursuit, and only because it's fun for him, only because it's challenging to him, then he admits that that's not true learning of Torah. We're not talking only about a book of smart issues that are discussed, and that people have to strenuously work hard to understand and pursue their intellectual capacity. If that's why you learn Torah, that's wrong. But if this reason to learn Torah is because it's the mitzvah of Hashem, but together with that, and it's these are the words of Hashem, and we acknowledge that we're connecting ourselves to what Hashem wants from us, to be learning Torah and to be performing the mitzvahs, fulfilling the mitzvahs, and together with that, we are so immersed in it, and we're so connected to Torah that we feel this tremendous happiness while learning of the Torah. Then this is the complete sense of the true learning of Torah, and that is limud lishma v'chulo kodesh gam ki ha'ta'anug mitzvah. Then the ta'anug itself, the delightful feeling itself, becomes part of the mitzvah, and that is a true way of learning Torah. So if we finalize, that is the spirit of Rav Avram Shapira, that we should continue on his ways of immersing ourselves as much as possible in the mitzvah of learning of Torah and fulfilling the Torah in the ways that he directed us, and feeling the great happiness of learning of Torah, and then being appreciative of anything spiritual.